Good morning. Welcome to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm Jay Thomas. We're taking the show on the road, so to speak. Anyways, we've got Rick Van Dyvendyke first. Hi, good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good morning. How is everything in Saskatoon?
Yeah, pretty nice. The kind of a sun and cloud kind of morning. Where are you coming to us from?
We're coming from Kelowna.
Okay, awesome.
British Columbia. Yeah, it's been actually pretty nice. It's been a little bit cloud cover, which is kind of a relief here because they've been having, before that, up around 36 to 40 degrees. So actually this cloud cover is kind of nice. It gets down, down around 26 degrees. It's kind of nice, pleasant.
That's awesome. Okay, and we got to say good morning to Jill. Good morning, Jill. How are you?
Good morning. I'm just across the lake from Rick in West Kelowna. Very similar location. We've been having a great time just hanging out with the kids, going for some walks, doing some fishing, that kind of stuff. It's been
awesome.
Great.
Awesome. Okay, well, anyways, welcome to the show, everybody, and join the conversation by calling 1-877-332-8255. You text that number as well. We'll get to check out that text line in just a moment here. Jill, I want to start with you, is what's going on in the greenhouse right now? What's happening at the garden center?
Well, it's so, so warm in the greenhouse right now, but we just finished moving our perennial plants outside, and a lot of people do ask us, why do we do that? We have this big greenhouse, and then we move all the plants outside, and the reason why is we want them to get the cooler nighttime temperatures. We'll notice in the evenings coming into August that our nighttime temperatures start to get cooler, and so our plants, like our perennials, we want them to start shutting down for the winter so they get acclimatized for our winter season. So we just finished moving our perennials outside, and we're starting to prep a little bit for the fall season coming up and actually getting a large tropical order in for back to school. So that's kind of what's happening in the greenhouse. And then the fall bulbs, like the tulips, will be arriving around the 20th of August. So yeah, that's kind of what's happening in the greenhouse right now.
Okay, awesome. 1-877-332-8255. So that's what's going on there. Weather, is looking kind of decent, I think, this coming up week. Some sun, some cloud. It's middle of summer, so it feels pretty good. Rick, are we still calling this a drought? We've had lots of rain recently.
Yeah, just around Saskatoon, but there's other places not around because it's been hit and miss. Like even
right.
where I am out in Blackstrap, and Saskatoon had a couple of downpours, like where the gutters couldn't keep up on the greenhouses. But about a Blackstrap, which is 30 minutes away, we had barely anything. So
okay.
It's been hit and miss all over the place. So yeah, just probe the soil whenever you're doing anything, especially if you just planted some new plants. Make sure that you're watering that root ball right down to the bottom of the root ball, not just, a liter of water is not going to do it for a new plant. So just make sure you probe the soil and make sure you see what the moisture is down at the bottom of the planting hole. That's key. And so checking it out. But, we in the tree lot at the garden center have been very busy. People have been coming up and filling in holes and picking up, spots in the yard for plants, whether it be hydrangea or spirea or dogwood or nine bark or even a tree. It's been people have been coming in and like I said, still planting. As long as you're not going to go away for 2 weeks, it's a great time to still do that.
Right. Yeah. There's lots of time for it to get rooted in, and get set up for winter, that sort of thing. Right.
Absolutely.
Are we doing any more fertilizing this time of year? Like, are we done now?
If you haven't fertilized your lawn since spring, then now it's basically run out. You can see it turning a bit yellow now.
Yeah.
So it's still time. We're still in July yet for a few days yet. So you can still put that summer fertilizer down. And then about the middle of September, you can put a fall fertilizer down to get it ready to go. So you will be doing lots of watering on your lawn. So, you can do that. Your shrubs, you can still water. You can still fertilize yet. Another time yet for sure. The trees were basically finished, especially like birches and maples. You don't want to fertilize those anymore. And your evergreens are basically done growing for the season right now as well. So nothing with the, if you are going to fertilize, nothing with the high nitrogen because you don't want to force them anymore.
Okay, perfect. Let's go to our text line, 1-877-332-8255. We'll get a call on here from Dave as soon as he's ready to go. But this is Donna, who's in Kenwood. And Donna says, good morning. Months ago, I noticed white spots on my Hoya. I tried spraying it with Endol, but it didn't work. I had to cut off 80% of the plant because I couldn't get into all the areas. I kept spraying it. It spread to lots of other different plants now. I've also tried Dr. Doom fungicide several times. Keep doing it over and over. I'm almost ready to throw them all out. So Donna from Kenwood sent us a picture of this Hoya, and it's kind of like clustery, clumpy, white barnacles you know, on the main stem of the plant. What do you think that is, Jill?
Most likely what she's got is a bug called mealybug. And mealybug is a harder one to control just because it can be in the soil and it also can be on the roots. It also, if you pull out your pot, you might actually see it on the bottom of your pot living on there too. So it is something you have to sterilize your pot, your container, everything around it. But one thing that I usually will do is every 10 days or every 7 days, put a good movie on, grab your little Hoya plants with some rubbing alcohol and a Q-tip, and just kind of rub with the rubbing alcohol with the Q-tip and sort of get everything cleaned out that way. You can, if you want to, Hoyas, you might want to transplant it if you have a really bad infestation and take all of the soil off of your plant and then make a soapy water solution, like with Endol or with even with a Dawn dish soap, and just kind of give your plant, whole plant, including the roots, a good rinse off and then plant it back in the soil. Make sure you rinse it off with clean water afterwards and then let it dry out.
Okay, so you're actually going to I'm looking at more pictures of this Hoya, and it's got these clustery clumps. They look like little, I don't know, puffed wheat on the bottom of some of the leaves and in the crotches, mm-hmm. where the leaves and the stems and the main branch kind of branch out from each other. Does that then represent what you're talking about with mealybug?
Yeah, it sounds like it. I can't see the picture from where I am
maybe grains of rice. That's kind of what it looks like too, you know, sort of like that.
Yeah, I would take the rubbing alcohol and wipe it on there. Usually when you do that, the white will turn kind of like a reddish-brown color, and that's kind of the bug melting away from the rubbing alcohol, so that's how you can tell. If you're uncertain that this is maybe not what it is, send that picture to info@dutchgrowers.com, and we can help you with that.
Yeah, too. Yeah. Sorry, Donna, we just got our experts out of a viewing range of everything today. So that's a good point I was going to make, actually, is if you've got questions today, not a perfect time to send us pictures, because Rick and Jill can't see them. It's just me looking at them. That doesn't necessarily help that much. So make sure you just describe what's going on. 1-877-332-8255. Let's squeak in one call here. We got Dave, who is in Broadview. Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Great. What's the question for us today?
Actually, it's in my son and daughter-in-law's yard. They have a very large rhubarb plant. Now, when they were about a week ago, they started cleaning up some of the leaves, and as they opened up, they found at the base of the plant, and the way he described it, it looked like a 4-liter pail. Somebody dumped a 4-liter pail of vanilla yogurt or something there, just a big creamy colored mass. Now, when they opened it up to the sunlight and stuff, it started to kind of to sink and almost deflate, sort of thing. And we were just, none of us had ever seen anything like that before, and just wondering what it was and any way to prevent it from coming back again.
Rick, yeah, what do you think that is?
What that is that's basically what it is. It's a fungus. Okay, so it's I can't remember the name of it right now. It's like an oozy. I think it's something like that. A fungus, but it's something that best way to get rid of it, like you said, is just to get the sunlight to it. That's the best way, and that it doesn't like that. It wants to be, you know, in the shade underneath those big leaves of the rhubarb and that. But getting it opened up so that you get the sunlight to it, that's the best way just to clean it up. You don't have to use any chemicals or anything like that. And then after that, you can just put some gloves on and just clean it up once it dries up a bit and get a lot of the spores out there the best you can. And that's about all you can really do, because there's no chemical or nothing like that will stop that. Just basically getting into the sunlight and get some light on it, that's the best way.
I had the same thing, Dave, happen with my hosta this spring. You know, that there was like one really wet stretch, and I've got mulch underneath my hosta, and I lifted up the leaves to kind of, you know, do some lawn trimming. I was like, whoa, what is that ugly, gross thing? Yeah, like a pile of yogurt sitting there. And I basically just cut a few leaves out to let some more light in, and then just kind of, like Rick said, gloves, and scooped it all away, cleaned it up, and it's been gone ever since. So,
okay. Yeah, one thing good with that is it's not harmful to the plant. You can aerate the soil underneath it and watch for overwatering as well, too.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave. Take care. 1-877-332-8255. We're going to take a quick break. Lots of texts rolling in now and a good time to join the conversation. 1-877-332-8255. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Welcome back to Garden Talk and happy Sunday. I'm Jay. We've got Jill and Rick both in Kelowna, BC right now on the phone with us. So the show is on the road and welcome to the show. So we're going to get to a few texts in a moment. We got a great event coming up in Saskatoon called Hort Days with the University of Saskatchewan. We'll talk about that shortly and what that all entails. Some really great events you can attend with the family or as a gardener, as somebody who takes care of a yard, all that kind of stuff. But first, we're going to a phone call right now. So we got Marianne who's in Pike Lake. Hi, Marianne. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Awesome. My question is, I have 35, 40-year-old Siberian elm trees bordering in my yard. And I noticed on one tree a couple weeks ago, now the other day we noticed about six or seven more that, like, they are weeping, like, a lot of, like, clear liquid, like water, you know, running out of them. One, I think, has a bit of a hole where it's coming, where the water is flowing out, but a bunch of them have it, and we're just wondering what. Also, I've noticed the one area for a few years, the bark is, like, falling off. Those ones are not weeping, but it's the bark is falling off, and, like, you're standing out there when it's extremely windy, you're getting pelted with chunks of bark.
Rick, what are you thinking about that?
Yep. Whereabouts do you live again, sorry?
We're just outside the Pike Lake Park.
Okay. Yeah, so you're in a lot of pretty sandy area
You are. Extreme.
And one thing about Manchurian elms is you've probably seen even the windbreaks in that. I remember as a kid, even our old windbreaks, most were Manchurian elms because that's what my mother and father mostly sold back in the 50s and early 60s. That was their biggest selling tree was the Manchurian elm. Mm-hmm. And especially in Santa, when they have the drought, they don't have a long lifespan. Okay. And so we've seen that a lot, where the bark falls off, and then they'll actually die down, and you'll see them start from the base of the trunk again. You know.
Okay. Yeah.
You get a lot of growth coming from the base of the trunk.
Yeah. Well, I know years ago we did have one. We just cut it down, and it just came right back.
So. Yeah, it comes right back again.
Yeah.
Now, if it was things like Dutch elm disease, which I haven't heard about it in the Pike Lake area at all, but you would notice that your leaves start, you know, actually wilting first, like drooping,
right,
like a witch's broom, and then turning yellow and then turning brown.
Okay. Yeah, that doesn't seem to be happening, I don't think.
Yeah, and I think what's with the drought and the age of the trees. You said they're about 25, 30 years old?
35, 40. Yeah, they were
35,
like,
40.
Some of them were 1984 that they were planted. So
yeah, so one of those because of the type of soil they're planted in, they're coming to the end of their time, right?
Mm.
So what I suggest you do when you got those places where they're just oozing out like that and you're losing the bark, basically, you trim them out, and then what you don't want to do with any elm trees, you don't want to use them, keep them around for firewood, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they should go to your local landfill or whatever and then get buried and all that kind of stuff, because you don't want to have any elm wood around to be able to attract an elm beetle, okay?
Right.
That's what you don't want.
Yeah.
So and then don't use it for transporting firewood around or any of that. That's the worst thing you could do with elm wood, is transport firewood.
Okay.
So, but I would suggest that just keeping them clean, and that's what we used to do in our old windbreaks, is keep them clean, trim out the, you know, the dead and dying branches like that, and then you'll keep them healthy that way, and then they'll just put on some new growth, and they'll fill out back again.
Okay. Would it be good with those ones that are weeping, maybe to cut them and let them start again with that?
If they're just weeping, they're just stressed from not having enough rain, you know, enough water. That's basically what's happening. So, I mean, you could leave them if they're just weeping, but the ones that, if they're weeping and the bark is all off of them, then I just trim those off.
Oh, okay.
Rick, when's the best time to trim them, or when should you be trimming them?
Well, if they're totally dead, you can trim them anytime, you know, as long as you take pictures of it's dead first so that you're making sure that you're not, you know, breaking any laws and that kind of stuff in Saskatchewan about trimming elmwood. But if they're totally dead, you can take pictures of the tree first. If it's dead wood, you want to get rid of it as soon as possible. But if it's live wood, you don't want to trim it until after September the 1st.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of what we thought. I know the neighbor's wanting us to trim some hanging over, and it's like, we can't trim them right now.
Yeah, after September 1st until April 1st, you can do all the trimming you want.
Yeah.
And then you just have to, you know, get it to the landfill and get it buried, or buried on if you're on a big farm or something like that, dig a hole and bury it or whatever, you know?
Right. Okay. All right, but you can, with the little branches, you can trim the little ones at this point now, could you?
That's not a problem at all. Well, instead, you shouldn't trim any elm branches if they're live right now until September 1st, okay?
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, but even those things where they're oozing and that kind of stuff, those are kind of things that would attract the insects, okay, where they're oozing a lot.
Okay.
And so that's why you want to make sure those branches, whether you do it, you know, now and take pictures of it and do it now, or otherwise do it right when in September. Get rid of all those branches, and then that's the best thing to do to keep the tree healthy.
Okay.
And if you can get water to them, that's the big one.
Okay. Yeah, I can. Yep. Can kind of water, I guess. I mean, we're on a shared well with the neighbors, so.
Yeah.
Is it it's a private well though?
Yes, yeah.
So at least, you know, as long as there's water in the well, you've got water, so that's good.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. Yeah. All right, thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks, Marianne.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
1-877-332-8255. You can call like Marianne did. You can text us just like this next one. This is from Not Sure Who. So if you do text us, send us your name, where you're from. That often helps us out. Hello, I have crabapple trees, and for the past two apple seasons, all the apples are full of brown spots, and they are soft and spongy. Is my tree infected with some sort of bug? What do you guys think?
Yeah, it's an apple maggot. So it's a fly that comes up basically in the end of June, beginning of July. A fly comes out of the ground as a fly, and then goes up and it looks for those developing apples, and it lays in eggs beside it. Then those eggs hatch, and then they burrow into the apple tree.
Mm.
So the best thing to do if you've got lots of them is basically pick every apple off that tree right now, because the larva is inside the apples. Pick them all off and throw them in the garbage. Don't put them in the compost or anything else, so that'll get them out of the yard. And that's the best way to stop the cycle, okay?
Okay.
What you can do otherwise next year is you can also put up some lures, which is like fake apples or tennis balls with lime green tennis balls with some tanglefoot on them, and then that when the fly comes out, they actually get look at the fake apples or those tennis balls where it looks like fake apples, and then they get stuck to the tanglefoot and they can't lay their eggs.
Okay,
onto them.
It's like a trap, basically.
And like a trap.
Okay, that's great. 1-877-332-8255. The next text, again, no name, but this is kind of a neat text. Somebody has a citronella plant. And they sent us a picture, and to describe it, it's just one leaf that they sent. That leaf is obviously green, but it's very rusty brown, like spotty rusty brown on that leaf. And it just says, I've sprayed my citronella with copper sulfate. It didn't help. What can I do now? What do you think, Jill?
Well, usually the reddish brown is usually a rust fungus. So spraying with a garden fungicide is what you have to do. Now, a lot of times what you're doing with that is you're preventing it from spreading. It's not going to fix that actual leaf that has the issue on it and make it look green again. So you're going to prevent it from spreading, and then you can do some trimming on your plant. It's not too late in the season to trim off some of that fungus, and then the plant is actually going to produce new leaves. And so keeping it healthy, you can fertilize your citronella plant with a 20-20-20 fertilizer right up until frost. So getting some new growth on it with this heat, it's going to grow so quickly. And then the other thing is watch when you're watering that you're watering right into the soil and not on the leaf of the plant. That will help you as well.
We're going to stop right there. News update for everybody right now, and back with more texts after that. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Welcome back to Garden Talk. I'm Jay. We've got Jill and Rick out in Kelowna, two different locations, but they're out in Kelowna right now. Guys, you ready to go?
We're ready.
Awesome. Sounds good. We've got actually the phones lighting up this morning, which is good to see. So we're going to kind of go in order of that when they arrived. Chris, Morris, hang on. But first, we're going to Regina to talk to Cindy. Hi, Cindy. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good. Let's go talk about what's going on wrong with your plant here. What's happening?
I have a hydrangea that's getting ready to bloom, but the inside leaves are all turning yellow.
Rick, what do you think?
If the inside leaves are turning yellow, it usually means either stress from, and how are the flowers themselves too, first of all?
They're fine.
They're fine?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not wilting or turning a brown color or anything like that?
No.
No, nothing that. Because usually yellow means a couple things. One is not enough light, okay? It's too shady in an area like that. But then you wouldn't get as many blooms. The other one is watching your water, inconsistent watering, either too wet or too dry. So those are the things. And then also the other one, last one, is just making sure that the fertilization, making sure they have enough food. Okay, if you haven't fertilized them at all, you might want to put a little bit of a 20-20-20 on them and just get them to just to brighten up a bit. But it's one of those three, either nutrients, water is the big one, is what makes it turn yellow, and light. Those are the, that's what the only things that really affect the hydrangeas that would turn them yellow like that.
Probably the best way to figure out the water, Cindy, is to probe the soil. Like we always talk about a piece of rebar or you know, something like that, that you can find out, is it really dry, is it really wet, and kind of figure it from there.
It gets lots of sun.
Well, that's good. Yeah. And if it's got blooms, that means that, you know, it's doing fairly well, because oftentimes they need that aluminum sulfate to actually bloom. Like I have to keep adding it to mine to get it to do that. And mine is just coming into bloom too. But I ran into that similar problem you're coming up with last year when I wasn't watering it enough. So.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. I had it too dry, and then I added actually a little weeping, those little tiny, you know, water lines and little nozzles you can add to a flower bed to join the rest of your watering system. And I added that. And so every time I turn the sprinklers on, it gets a blast right underneath the plant too. And that fixed the problem. So.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Take care.
Yeah. Thank you.
1-877-332-8255. We'll keep going with this to Hendon right now to talk to Morris. Good morning, Morris. How are you?
I'm all right. Good.
Right on. What's going on? You got a maple tree, right?
When can I cut maples? It's a great big branch. It's laying down in there, falling down in the lawn.
So it's hanging out in the lawn.
Yep. The maples you can prune any time now. The best time to prune them is in starting the 15th of July up until about September the 30th. So now, if you want to do some pruning on the maples, now's a great time to do that.
Okay, good.
All right. Thank you for the call.
Another question I got.
Yep.
Probably a week ago now, there were white spots in the garden. You could see them on the black dirt. It looked like little pebbles of snow that comes in the fall. You know, the first
time
they're scattered here and there around in the garden, and you pick them up and crush them, they're just about like chalk.
There again, if it's like chalk in that, usually that means it's a fungal growing on the soil. So just best thing to do with that is just take your little garden cultivator or a little rake or something like that and just work up the soil, and that'll just make that dry up and disappear.
It's over the whole garden, both of them.
Yep, so that's it. Just work up your soil a little bit, and then that'll clear that all up.
Okay, good.
Okay. All right, thanks for the call, Morris. Take care. 1-877-332-8255. We'll keep moving here. One more call in Regina, and Chris is on the line. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well.
Excellent.
About 2 weeks ago, I reseeded our front lawn. We moved in 12 yards of topsoil, reseeded. The grass is coming up. It's about a half an inch, but also coming up is a blanket of these kind of five little round-leafed weeds. And I'm wondering how to control those weeds with the grass coming up as well.
Yeah. You know what? When the new grass comes up as well, I don't even worry about the weeds, because a lot of those weeds are going to be an annual weed, okay? And there'll be might be a few perennial weeds in there, but most will be annual weeds. So when the weeds come up, I basically call them a cover crop, okay? And so what happens is that you're cutting you'll be able to cut your grass pretty soon anyways, once the grass gets longer, and that'll keep those weeds from going to seed, okay? But otherwise, just keep doing that, and by next year, your grass will choke out all those weeds and you won't have them. So your grass is too young to use any herbicides, okay? You'll damage your grass.
Right on. So, okay, that's great. Now, I have one more quick question. Yep. I've got an elm tree in the back. The elm tree seems to be seeping sap out of a split in the trunk. Well, like the trunk has two main trunks that come out of one area. It's seeping some sap, and the tree has got quite a few ants on it. How do I control that?
Yeah, there's nothing you can do to control it if it's weeping out of a crack, right? So the only way you can control that is that, you know, later on after September when you can prune it, you can do two things. One, you can cut the branch off so that it actually doesn't keep, you know, with the wind, doesn't keep moving and keep opening and closing, you know?
Yep.
But you have to do that in September if you want to do that, or you can actually use a long drill bit and put a ready rod through up higher than the V, okay, and bolt the two together so they don't move so much. The ants are only going after the sap as for food, okay? That's what they're doing. And because your sap's also attracting things like aphids and that kind of stuff, and so they're just working with what's happening. They're not attacking the tree or nothing. They're just feeding on what's happening there.
Okay, in terms of treating the ants, is it okay to spray them on the trunk with like ant killer?
Yep, absolutely. Not a problem.
Okay. All right, perfect. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call, Chris. Take care. Bye-bye. 1-877-332-8255. Hey, just one more time, a little bit more time for one more call, which is perfect. This one just rolled in. So into Regina here as well. I think this is Nalita. Is that correct?
Yes.
Hi there.
Correct.
All right, good morning. You want to talk
good
about
morning.
your coleus? Is that correct?
Yes, I have a huge coleus and very, very healthy. But I noticed that they have tons of little, almost invisible white bags.
Okay.
In the soil. What can I do and where does that come from?
Jill, what do you think? White bugs in the soil around the coleus?
Yes.
White bugs in the soil around the coleus. Usually you don't see white bugs like a mealybug or anything like that around the soil. So you might just even have aphids or something like that. What I would do is most bugs that would harm the coleus, you can spray with a product called Endol. And you want to spray that every 7 days. But if your plant isn't being harmed by these bugs and you're not seeing any damage, bugs aren't necessarily a bad thing. They're only a bad thing if they're harming the plant. So what you could even do is you could take your hand and you could scrape off those bugs and just throw them in the garbage, or even just take some water and wash them off. That's what I would do first.
Yeah, but there are just so many that it just I just pick up 3 dead leaves and on the plant, and I mean it's healthy, but those 3 dead leaves that I pick up, it's worrying me that it's gonna kill my coleus.
Yeah, then I would use a product called Endol.
Endol?
And I would give it a good spray. It's a product that's made with canola oil and also pyrethrin from the chrysanthemum flower. And it's going to coat those bugs and it's going to kill them for you.
Oh, okay. And how often do I do that?
I would do them every 10 to 14 days.
Okay, and it's mixed with water or just the way they come? Like
you can buy it as a ready-to-use, and then you just spray it on, or you can mix it with water.
Okay, then. Thank you so very much. You have a good day.
Thanks, Nalita. Take care. Okay.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 1-877-332-8255. That Endol product, Jill, is actually pretty clever because it takes care of a lot of bugs, right?
It does. It's a great all-purpose insecticide that you can use on a lot of different things. So if you have an issue and just maybe removing the bugs and spraying with water is not working, Endol usually covers a lot of different varieties, whether it's aphid, spider mite, mealybug, and scale. So
right. And then
and if you have a woolly aphid, let's say that's in the ground, then you could actually mix it in a watering can and then actually just water the soil with it, and that'll get rid of them too.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Perfect. 1-877-332-8255. Now is actually a good time to take a little break. We've got lots of text to get to, but we've kind of wrapped up the phone lines here for a moment. So that's good. We got through all the calls. Over to the text as soon as we get back. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. This is Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Happy Sunday morning and welcome back. I'm Jay. We've got Jill and Rick on the phone. We've got Dawn, who's in Blucher, waiting on the phone as well. Dawn, we'll get to your call in just a moment. We wanted to start this segment, guys, with talking about an event that's happening pretty soon here, August 7th and 8th, and it's called Hort Days with the University of Saskatchewan. Right, Rick?
Yeah, there's lots of things going on for the whole family, and even if you want to do some things with the kids and that. So there's lots to do with that. Or if you want to learn about how to do container gardening, or if you want to do things about when to harvest your vegetables or house caps and sour cherries. And there's a whole bunch of different topics. And there's even on the Friday, there's even a free, all the other ones have a little bit of a cost to them. You can check that online. But on Friday, they have a tour of Patterson Gardens, which is an arboretum of different plants that grow around Saskatchewan here. And there's a free tour there. And then also there's another workshop on, we always get a lot of people asking, how do I bud or graft? And they actually have a hands-on workshop that's happening at the field lab at the University of Saskatchewan just off of 14th Street. And so there's lots to do, lots to see. So, I think you have the website up there. You can just give more information, Jake.
Yeah, for sure. So go to gardening.usask.ca. You can also just enter into Google Hort Days, and it'll be pretty much the first thing that shows up. And it gives you a total outline. There's registration you can do online for this. You can pay online. It starts with a family horticultural fun time, which goes 10 to 12 on Thursday. So great to take the kids to. It's $20 to get into that at the agricultural building. There's like all kinds of, you know, basically playtime involving plants, which is pretty cool. But then there's a session on Pick It Perfect, how and when to harvest your garden, introducing canning and preserving. So if you're a person who like is growing your own stuff this year, but you maybe don't have grandma or mom or, you know, an auntie, you can ask about canning or preserving. You can actually take a lesson in that. Bob's Best Berries, about sour cherries, has caps, designing with plants. So incredible containers. There's one about designing that for outdoor, you know, living. Soil rehab, 365 days of green and more. So producing fresh food all year round on your windowsill. So there's really, really cool, courses to take. It's all kind of going on same time. There's different sessions, different, you know, so check that out. Gardening.usask.ca. Good website, easy to find, easy to navigate, really cool to check out. So, man, I want to go to some of that stuff. Now that I'm looking at it more, it's like, oh, I want to find out about that. Like, that's cool. I don't know.
It's a good program. They have it on every summer, and it's a great program to go on. Just whether you're a new gardener or an advanced gardener, there's lots for everybody there.
Jill and I are close to the same age, and Jill, we probably are seeing more and more people coming into the garden centers that are, you know, millennials, younger, who are going, yeah, I remember my mom and my grandma gardening and canning, and I want to get back into that. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, we are seeing that. We're seeing lots of people actually getting back into their roots and that becoming more of a trend, and just asking the question, why, how do I do this, and watching YouTube videos and things on TikTok. But this is a great way where you can actually see things on hands-on. The other thing is there's lots of people who are new to Canada and maybe not familiar with how to do things within our climate and how to save things within our climate. So this is also great for a newcomer to do as well.
Yeah, no kidding. And I've you know, if you don't have the family knowledge that you've received from somebody else, you know, a mama or a grandma or something like that, this is a way you can still learn that, what you need to know to make it happen. And that's pretty cool. You can do it right here. And the other thing I was going to mention is when you're watching YouTube videos, TikTok videos and stuff like that, they're great for gardening, but not all of it applies to the way we have to garden right here in our province, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is like
absolutely,
this is information from Saskatchewan for Saskatchewanians. So that's the crucial part, right?
Yeah, and make it an event. Get some girlfriends together, or get some family members together, and go for brunch and then take in a class. It's a great way to get out and kind of educate yourself on being able to enjoy the fruits of your labor in a way.
August 7th and 8th. So yeah, gardening.usask.ca makes you head there. Check it out.
And if you want something for the kids to do that Thursday at 10 o'clock, they have one just for the whole family, especially for the kids there. So it's a great one to be able to have an event you can do in the summer with the kids to learn about gardening.
Everybody's always looking for more to do with the kids while they're out of school. Yeah. So there you go. Yeah. Right now, let's go to Blucher right now and talk to Don. Hi, Don. How are you doing?
Yeah, morning, guys. Good. It's nice out here today.
Oh, good. Right on.
Hey, the question I have is I had put copper spray on my rose bushes because the leaves were showing some signs of some kind of bug on them. And I'm wondering, do I just do the roses? Do I do the hascaps, the saskatoons? Like, where do I stop?
Yeah, if the hascaps and saskatoons, especially the saskatoons, are showing rust on them, you know, or some little growths, they look like little spiky little growths on them, then you can use things like the Bordeaux or copper spray on them as well. And you got to use it basically three times, spraying anywhere from 10 to 14 days apart. Now, if it's just bugs, that controls basically fungals and viruses and that kind of stuff, okay? Right. But if it's a bug, copper spray is not going to really stop you from the bugs. You got to use a product called Bug X Out or End All, okay, for those ones, if you got a bug. Copper spray won't hurt a bug. So I'm not sure what you have, but if it's a bug, the copper spray is not going to help. But if it is a fungal, what it does is it will suppress the fungal and keep it from spreading. It won't necessarily make that leaf get better, but it'll stop it from spreading so the new leaves can take over and make the plant look a lot better and healthier.
I got to jump in right here, guys. Sorry, we got to go to our break. So hopefully that helps you out, Don.
Now I had one more quick.
Hey, we're gonna get you. We will get you. Hey, Don, we'll get you on as soon as we go to our break. So hang on, we'll tell you one second. Okay, we'll get that on in just a moment. We'll be back for our second hour with a news update at the top of the hour. Here I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Well, welcome to hour number two of Garden Talk. I'm Jay. We've got Jill and Rick on the phone today. They're out in Kelowna. So different locations, but out in Kelowna right now. And guys, welcome back to the second hour here. We've got stuff to talk about with Hort Week. We mentioned that a little bit last segment. We'll get to that a little bit later on, kind of give everybody a refresh for if there's new listeners to this second hour as well. Lots of text to get to. We're going to talk about plum trees in a second with Les's text. But first, the phone calls always get to go number one. So we're going out to Kipling out near Regina to talk to Dave. Hi, Dave. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you guys today?
Pretty good. Thanks for waiting for us. What's going on in the yard?
Well, I got a problem with mushrooms, and it's not the happy ones either. last year, we had talked about these streaks of bright grass that I had kind of all over my lawn, and we kind of got it down to, well, maybe there was trees there at one time. But this year, there's just a lot more of those, but they all have mushrooms in them. Like, I mean, just toadstools, mushrooms, I'm not exactly sure what they are, but they're small, hard, they probably the size of a toonie. And they are just popping up everywhere, and I can't figure that one out.
Yeah, so mushrooms are growing on something organic, okay? Whether it's a buildup of a lot of you know, thatch from your lawn grass, or it's from, like you were saying before, it's either an old 2x4 or an old root from an old tree. It could be anything that is growing on. In the mulch, it'd be growing in the mulch from that, because that's organic as well. So it all depends on moisture content and different growing conditions. So the best thing you could do is to, if you said it's more of a lime color, your lawn, is that what you were saying as well?
No, it's a pretty nice bright green.
Bright green,
pretty
okay.
Vibrant.
So now the best thing you could do for that is just, in those places where you have the mushroom, is just aerate your soil. Okay, in those areas, take a garden fork, something like that. And then water, put a little more fertilizer in that area. But if you have a lot of them, you can also use a compost accelerator. You can buy that. It comes in either liquid or powder. You get it used for your compost bins and that. But it also will help break down, you know, what's happening. If you don't mind the mushrooms, just leave the mushrooms alone. They'll actually help break down the organic matter itself, okay, as well. But if you don't like the mushrooms, then matter of just picking them, because they will spread by spores as well. But you still need to get rid of what they're feeding on. And so that's you by doing a good thatch on next spring on your lawn. That'd be the big one to do. And just do a power rake on it. And then also, like I said, keep the fertilizer up, because the higher nitrogen fertilizer will help break down that organic matter as well.
Now, anticipate them being more so next year, or will they kind of come and go?
They will come and go. It all depends. It depends on moisture. A lot has to do with, you know, the amount of moisture you have. If you want to get rid of them too, is to cut back on your watering a little bit too, and that'll help dry them out a bit too.
I was going to ask, Dave, when do you water your lawn?
I try not. No, I never.
Never?
Never, because we live out on an acreage, so
Okay.
We're on a well, so no, that and the fertilizer I don't do. So I'm kind of reluctant on that unless I could get you guys to come out and help me cut the lawn a couple times a week.
Yeah, well, those are the kind of things you have to do in order to get rid of it, is that it needs nutrients, nitrogen to break it down, or using compost accelerator, and that's about all you can do to get rid of it. Otherwise, just let them play their course, and once they finish feeding, breaking down what they're feeding on, then they'll disappear.
So it's not a permanent forever thing, these mushrooms,
no.
Right?
No.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Thanks for the help. Okay. Have a great day.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Dave. Take care.
Bye now.
1-877-332-8255. Over the text line, Les in Corning, who is one of our regulars. Let's jump into that one. Les asks, when's the best time of year to plant plum trees? What do you think, Rick?
Yeah, plum trees you can plant throughout the season. Most plum trees you can get at the garden centers are in pots, in pots and containers. And you can plant them anytime during the growing season, as long as you just don't take off and not water them. And so you go on holidays and those kind of things. So you have to keep them moist, because with all the leaves on them, when it gets warm in the summertime, it'll dry out the root ball. And so it's just a matter of keeping that root ball moist right down to the bottom of the root ball. So that's, you know, probing that root ball, but putting the garden hose and just let it trickle right onto the stem of the tree, and keeping that root ball, which is made of peat moss and mulch and that kind of stuff. It dries out quicker than the soil around it, so just keeping that hydrated is the key, and otherwise you can plant them all summer long.
Okay. Mike from Grenfell sent us this text. Any idea what is causing browning and falling off of a bunch of needles on my 15-year-old Mugo pines? And these Mugo pines are pretty big plants. It looks like Mike is on an acreage or farm, probably a farm. I see kind of a canola field in the background, but it looks like it's kind of in the yard, possibly maybe around the house or the barn or whatever. There's kind of lawn around it, and I can see a field in the background. But Mugo pines turning brown in the middle of the plant and the needles falling out. What do you think?
There's a couple things that happen with pine trees. Is number one is they get scale on them, which you'll see white speckles on the needles themselves. Okay, and that's an insect that sucks on the needle. And you have to take care of those when they're in the crawling stage. When those when they look like paint flecks, like really hard, you can't get them. But as soon as they turn fuzzy, you can hit them with Endol, Bug X Out, anything. It'll take care of them really easy. So that's one thing. The other one is spider mite, and that works from the inside out, where the spider mite works, and you can't really see the spiders or the webbing. It's right between the needles and along the stems of where the needles come out of the stems. And so you got to look with a magnifying glass, or take a white piece of paper with a clipboard and give it a tap. You'll see these little bugs go around. And those you can just blast with cold water, or if you have a product called malathion around, you can use that, or you can use the Bug X Out, or actually what will work better is the Endol, because the canola oil will coat the bug and then keep them from reproducing as well.
Okay. 1-877-332-8255. This is, no name. Oh, there it is, Daniel in Regina. I'm wondering if you guys could help me with some lawn advice. I recently laid down sod early June. Everything has been going well up until recently. I noticed some brown spots showing in my grass that are kind of various sizes, large and small. I've added groundkeeper fertilizer about a week ago. Is there something else I could do?
No, just consistent moisture. Because one thing about the grass, depending on, you know, how the soil was spread and everything else, you'll get dry spots and wet spots. So just trying to keep, it might be the way the sprinklers are hitting the grass and that. So if it's a brand new grass, most likely it has to do with either the soil that was underneath it, or just not consistent watering over the whole grass. And so just be wary of that, and just keep it well, nice and moist until it gets rooted. And then after that, it'll take care of itself.
Okay. So it's just kind of going through a bit of a tough phase right now.
Yep.
And that's sort of it.
Transplant shock, and just, like I said, moisture is the big one.
And sometimes when you lay down sod, and as much as we try to get the soil nice and level underneath, it's not always perfect. And sometimes that is just, it's not contacting the soil, right? Like a one little patch here and there.
Yeah, little patch. Or when you spread your soil, some places it's the soil is nice and thick, and other places it's really thin to the clay.
Right.
And so then your grass reacts differently to that as well. So.
And it'll even out eventually, right? As it gets established. So there you go.
Absolutely. And the groundskeeper will help it to get even out quicker.
Okay. Here we go. One for Jill. Jill, this is, I'm not sure who. Oh, it's Pat. Says, I've got a bee palm that the leaves have all gone silvery white. I've stripped all the yucky leaves and I'm wondering if it'll leaf back out. It was lush and beautiful, but seems to have this happen when I went away for a weekend. Maybe it was overwatered.
Yeah, when the leaves go silvery white, there's one of two things that we can see. Usually it's overwatering, but then you'll usually see the leaves turning brown as well. The silvery color makes me think that there might be spider mite on that palm, which is a common bug that attacks the palm.
Yep.
And what you'll do is you'll look on the backside of the leaf, and you'll actually see like the green has come out of the plant, and you see almost like little speckles and a very fine webbing, almost like dust, on the back of your plant. Then you know you have spider mite. I would do a good spray with Endol, and you probably will need to do about 3 treatments every 10 to 14 days.
Okay, perfect. There we go. This is from Janine, who's in Regina. I have maybe I'm going to say this wrong. I've never heard of this. Taurinia, T-O-R-E-N-I-A. I have a Taurinia that has flowered nicely and is now basically greenery. I've fertilized and it's shaded till about 2 o'clock. Then it has some sun. I have deadheaded it and the plant looks healthy. Not sure why it's not flowering anymore.
Now, Taurinia is one that actually does do a little bit better in a shady location. So the fact that it's got sun in the hot part of the day, it might be getting too much sun. But a good fertilizer that you can use to get a plant to rebloom is increasing the middle number. So go to a 15-30-15 fertilizer, and sometimes doing that will help rebloom, make your plant rebloom as well, too. You can also do some deadheading, pinching, and pruning, and that will help the Taurinia rebloom as well.
Okay, so give that a shot there. Anyways, we're going to go to a break. Larry is in Osler. Larry wants to talk about strawberries not doing what they're supposed to do. Larry, hang on. As soon as we get back from the break, we'll talk about that with you. And then back to the text line as well. Lots to get through. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. You're listening to Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Well, slowly but steadily, clouds are kind of moving off here in Saskatoon, where we're broadcasting from. And it looks like we're going to see some sunshine today, which is nice. Little chance of showers a little later on, depending on where you are. It's sort of like a 30%, something like that. So should be a pretty good Sunday. Good day for getting out and doing that sort of thing. We'll talk about Hort days in a little bit here as well. Stick around for that information. I've got Rick and Jill by phone today, and we've got lots of calls to get through here too. So calls and texts, and here we go. Waiting the longest is Larry, who's one of our regulars in Osler. Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm depressed. I saw seascape strawberries at the farmer's market, and mine aren't growing any.
What do you think, guys?
Well, I got a few questions for you. The first one that I usually ask is, how much sun are they getting? Are they getting
lots of sun?
Okay, and then the fertilizer that you're using, they don't like a lot of nitrogen, so you want to make sure you have a low nitrogen fertilizer when you fertilize.
Yeah, I've tried. I've put a lot of the some of the blooming fertilizer on, and that didn't give them any shots.
Okay, and then the other thing, do you have them in containers or in the ground?
In the ground. It's heavy soil.
Ground. And is this the first year for them, or have you had them for many years?
I started them last year, and this is the second year.
Okay. And do the leaves look really green, and they're getting lots of runners?
Yeah, they're doing all that.
Yeah. So it sounds like they might just be getting... They might just be getting a little bit too much fertilizer, so you might want to slow down on the fertilizer a little bit. And that's usually what I usually will see, is if you get lots of green leaves and the plants are doing great but you're getting no flowers, that's one thing that will do. Do you have lots of runners on them? Because if you have lots of runners, you can trim some of the runners off, and sometimes that will promote flower growth as well, too.
Yeah, I wouldn't say lots of runners, but just a couple.
So it's kind of baffling because you've got like a really nice plant. It's all healthy and everything. It's just not making the flowers to make the fruit.
Right. And I've got other strawberries that are doing really well, but they're not the seascape.
Yeah, and seascape is known for being a great ever-bearing variety or a day-neutral variety that's going to produce all season long. I don't really have trouble with that one. So it's either being kept a little bit too moist or... The too much fertilizer. Those would be the two things that I'm usually seeing when I don't get as many flowers. So maybe try aerating the soil a little bit. That might help.
It could be too moist, right?
Yeah.
Especially in a heavy clay, you got to really watch how you get the moisture for those.
Can you grow them indoors in the winter?
You can if you provide a grow light for them. So you'd have to provide a grow light for them and make sure you keep up on some nutrients.
All right. Thanks for your help.
Yeah. Thanks, Larry. Take care. All right. 1-877-332-8255. Okay, next one on here is Dennis, who's in Saskatoon. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm good, and you?
Pretty good. What's going on with the raspberry bush with you?
I just have a friend gave me a seedling or whatever a few years ago, and I put it in a spot, and it's kind of been overgrown with other fruit trees. It's not getting very much sun, so I wanted to move it, and it comes up every year, grows a couple inches, and then it's done. So I wanted to move it. I bought some other raspberry bushes this year and put them in a nice sunny area of the yard. And
perfect.
So I was wondering if I can move it now or should I wait till fall?
What do you think, Rick?
If it's just a little plant, you can, if you try to move it with a big ball of earth, you know, either take a whole full shovel full of dirt.
Yeah.
Then you can move it right now. But if you can't move it with a bunch of dirt, then you're best to wait till the plant is dormant in the fall or first thing in the spring before the leaves come on, okay?
Yeah.
But okay. If you move it now, then the best thing to do is move it and then actually shade it somehow. Throw a sunshade over top of it or a chair or a table or whatever just to give it some shade until it gets past the transplant stalk.
Okay.
Okay.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, yeah. Dennis. Take care. Good luck.
Bye now.
1-877-332-8255. Calls always go first. Texts are coming up next. Dave is in Saskatoon right now. Hi, Dave. How's it going?
Oh, real good. Thank you.
Excellent. What's going on with the crop, your crop in your garden? Or what's the question for us,
well,
I should say?
mainly the root crops. I'm thinking radishes, beets, carrots. I get a lot of tops, and there's, especially with the radish, there was nothing underneath. So I'm wondering what I'm doing wrong.
Jill, what do you think?
Well, it could be a few things. One thing is heat, especially if we have them in a raised bed or the garden's really hot. Some of our root crops, I'm talking about our radishes, they are cool weather crops. So that's one thing that can happen. The other thing is too much fertilizer. Too much nutrients in your soil can cause a lot of top growth, but not a lot of bottom growth. So those two things is usually what we see with the radishes. They're a cool crop, so too much heat, you'll get all tops and no bottoms. But the other ones, it's usually too much nutrients, or you've planted things too close together, so then you'll get the tops but no bottoms as well, too. Rick, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, too much manure or too much compost will in root crop plants will cause that, a lot of top as well.
Okay.
So...
Should I be thinning them about now, like especially the beets?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely should be thinning them out. And I like thinning them out as soon as possible. So as soon as they start sprouting up, but they're really tight, I'll start thinning, especially the root crops. I'll thin them out when they're just tiny, really tiny. That's better than when they get bigger, because when you try to pull them out when they're bigger, they're actually disturbing the plants around them, right? So if you can thin them out as soon as possible.
Oh, okay. The other problem I had last year, I talked to you about the, I had Evans cherries, and I guess there were flies around were laying eggs, and there were small wigglies inside the cherries.
Yep.
This year they look super, and I haven't seen really any flies around. I think I cleaned everything up last fall, so I hope I eliminated that problem. I'm just wondering if I should pick them a little earlier this year.
Yeah, you can pick them earlier. I mean, the sour cherries, they'll just be a little bit more sour when you pick them a little bit earlier. They turn sweeter as you leave them on longer. But the key is picking them, and if you do have the worms, picking them, and if you have to miss a year, and that means picking them before they actually ripen, when the flies are inside of them, and they actually throw them in the garbage and get them out of the yard and start cycling, which sounds like that's what you did last year. So now you're going to have way less because you stopped the cycle.
Yeah, I so far I've been eating the odd one because they just barely come off with the... With a pit coming with it, and they look pretty good this year. So I'm hoping that I've beat that problem.
Perfect.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave. Yep. Take care.
Yep.
1-877-332-8255. We got time. Oh, maybe we can squeeze. We've got 30 seconds. We talked about apple maggots before. Pat asks, is it too late to treat apple maggots and how? And of course, right, Rick, the answer is, if you got apple maggots, you got to make sure that they're not hitting the ground. So just picking all those apples ahead of time, you're going to lose a crop this year, right?
Yeah, because the fly already laid its eggs, okay? So if they're going to be there, they're going to be there. And if they're inside of them, just take a knife and just test some of them. If they're inside of them, the best thing to do is pick the whole crop and then throw it all in the garbage so that you don't have that cycle happen next year.
And the cycle stops, right? There we go. Yep. You'll lose a crop, but you would have lost it anyways because they're full of maggots. So there you go. And it'll fix it for next year. We got to go to our break. News update right now, and then lots of text to get to. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Well, we're going to do two rounds of the lightning round with the texts right now. So we're going to skip the calls at this point, close up the phone lines, and stick to the text because we've got so many to get through. I've got Jill and Rick, of course, here with me, and they're in Kelowna on the phones. And next week, by the way, we are going to have because it's long weekend next week, right, guys? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, next weekend is the August long.
Isn't that crazy? That's like, what? What's happening? Time's going so fast. So August long weekend, we're going to be a pre-recorded show. We're going to replay a show from before. Everybody's going to get a little vacation off, some holidays and stuff like that. So that'll be a pre-recorded one. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy. We'll be back live in a couple of weeks, of course. Let's go to the text line here. And before we do that, I want to talk about Hort Days one more time. And that is a great event happening with the University of Saskatchewan and their gardening and agricultural, their whole program there. But Thursday, August 7th, and Friday, August 8th, there's a whole big load of courses and sessions that you can take part of. Some of them have a little cost, $20 or $30, but lots of information, lots of great stuff to do with your family and your kids. It starts off with Family Horticultural Fun, which is ages 6 to 12. It goes 10 to 12 at the Agricultural Building on Thursday. So that's great. Then it's lots for adults, and you can still bring kids to this stuff, but when to harvest your garden, canning and preserving, hascaps and sour cherries. There's ones about berries specifically. Designing incredible containers, rehabbing your soil, producing fresh food year-round on your windowsill. And then on Friday, there's a budding and grafting workshop. We talked about that lots, guys, in this show about budding or grafting, but it's really, I don't want to say it's really hard, but it's hard to describe when you don't see it in person, the technique. And then I think in that workshop, you actually get to practice it, right? Hands-on?
That's correct, that'll be hands-on stuff on how to do it there, and that's a great way to learn.
And then there's the Pattison Arboretum Tour, which is totally free to wrap things up on Friday. That's the section that's between 14th Street and College Drive, kind of across the street from the field house, right? That's that area?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Right along College Drive, if you look through the fence and the trees, you can kind of see it, and a lot of people don't know it's there, actually, and it's free to go to walk around, and it's quite amazing, and all the trees are labeled, and you can see what a tree looks like mature.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. In fact, that's most of the time when you hear about reports of deer on the College Drive freeway or Circle Drive, it's because they've wandered out from that area. So we're going to get back to the text line right now. So check that out, gardening.usask.ca, or just Google Hort Days, and you're going to find a quick link to all the information there. You can register, you can pay for it online, and get to be a part of that. Great thing to do with the family, August 7th and 8th. Text line, 1-877-332-8255. Let's see. This is from, not sure, but says, good morning. Got a honeysuckle tree that's always been healthy, but the last couple of years, it's getting large, bare patches. It looks like an entire limb sections are dying out. How do I fix that?
Yeah, this needs to be rejuvenated. A lot of times you just need to trim it back and let them grow back again.
Right.
Honeysuckles have they do age, and then you will get some branches that will die out. Just trim them off. And then fertilize lots and that kind of stuff. And then you'll, especially during from May until the middle of July, and then you'll get a lot of new growth coming and fill those spots in again. But, I mean, a lot of those plants, once they get older, especially honeysuckles, they get really woody, and then you'll lose some branches.
Okay. Lauren is on the text line out of Saskatoon at Grandora. Is it okay to put alfalfa tea on pines and spruces and birches right now?
Yeah, alfalfa tea is very low in nitrogen, so you can do that to help bring up the health, because alfalfa pellet pea has lots of all the micronutrients in it. So not very high nitrogen, which is a good thing for right this time of the year. But all those other nutrients will help keep the tree healthy, which is a big thing.
So like if normally we say stop fertilizing now, the exception would be alfalfa tea. We could keep going with that, Rick?
Yeah, especially I don't want to use a 30-10-10 anymore.
Right, that's over.
The trees. But the alfalfa pellet tea, you're only looking at about a 2 or 3 nitrogen.
Yeah.
But it has all those micronutrients which help keep the health of the tree, which is great.
Cool. Heather's in Bjorkdale and says, I planted 2 clematis. Both of them turned black and died. I don't know what I did wrong. It was told to me to plant them in the full sun, but I've had suggestions I need some shade. What do you think, Jill?
Well, clematis, sometimes they get clematis wilt, so that's a symptom of them turning black and collapsing. So you will see this on some varieties. That might not be what happened. If you do see this, you want to immediately cut back those infected stems. The other thing is the clematis like cool roots, but they like hot tops. So a lot of times if we've transplanted a clematis in the heat of the summer, the roots will get too hot and then you'll start seeing your plant will start dying back too. So a lot of times what I will do is I'll try and shade the roots a little bit by planting another smaller shrub in front of the clematis plant.
Yep.
Or just even putting something up sort of to shade the roots a little bit so the top gets the heat but the bottom doesn't.
Okay. This is maybe a bit of a controversial one, but this is a guy named Rick as well, who's in Saskatoon, says, I've had an arborist tell me that it's okay to store elm wood and use it for firewood if all the bark is removed. Is that correct or not? I have a neighbor cut down 6 big elms and has a lot of good wood. Advice is appreciated.
Yeah, it has to be barkless, because that's what the elm beetles will store. But I mean, I think what's happening is that right now the law says you just can't store elm firewood, period. Just because if you leave some bark on it and everything else, then you'll have some problems. So not everybody's going to be able to take all the bark off, and they just don't do that. So they just leave the law in just to protect our inventory. The law is so that you can't store it, period. And just because some people will think they can do it right, but it's not done right, and I'd rather be safe than sorry with all these trees. I'm sorry. That's just the way I look at it myself, is that it is too much of a hazard to lose those beautiful trees we have in our cities and towns across Saskatchewan.
Basically, what you're saying is it's pretty selfish just to keep. I know it's nice. 6 big elm trees gives you a lot of firewood, but it's pretty selfish if that resulted, just for your own firewood, if that resulted in the elm beetle and Dutch elm disease taking down a big chunk of the city, right? So
exactly.
As nice as that is, it's still illegal.
Yeah.
Right? To the letter of the law, it's still illegal.
The letter of the law is still illegal.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you cannot have it, bark or not.
Yep.
It's not to be kept. So that's, I guess, what we got to say. Let's see. Dawn in Regina asks, is it okay to trim cedars right now? He sent a text saying prune is maybe more the word.
Yeah, you can prune. Just remember, you can only prune as far in as you can still see green, because if all of a sudden you prune in, so there's just sticks involved, it'll take like a lot of years for it to fill back out again.
Okay, there you go. This is Deborah, who's in Regina. I love your show. My neighbors and I have an area between our driveways that are, you know, in between them. We're looking for some advice. We cut back all the creeping juniper last year, and we had some stumps removed. What remains is the original soil with the landscape fabric underneath and small pebbles in the soil. Additionally, other growth is present that we have to remove. The dirt is a bit high on one side. We're wondering if we can lift the fabric, remove some of the soil to refresh it. If so, how much soil should we take out? What should we put in there? Wondering if we can get away with just removing the landscape fabric and current growth, rototill, reuse some of that soil, maybe the pebbles in there, keeping it in there. Kind of minimize costs, looking for the type of prep work that's required to plant perennials. So on the perennials, we can plant, can we plant them in this fall, wait till spring if we don't get it to this year? So just looking for some advice, basically.
Yeah, definitely remove. Anytime you have plants, I don't like using fabric at all. So just plant, you know, plant your perennials, shrubs, whatever you want to do. There's some small shrubs, perennials. There's still lots of perennials out there that you can get that'll fit in those kind of spaces, and then if you need, when you pull it up, you can check your soil. If it's got good depth of soil, you can reuse that soil that's there, and actually those pebbles help aeration with the soil as well, so I wouldn't worry about that. And so you can just leave all that, and then just, you might want to add some some compost or into that soil with it too. That'll just help, you know, bring up a good environment for those perennials to grow, and then mulch, and then you're good to go.
But and if there is some stumps that are getting ground up in that, you know, you can leave some of that mulch in there as compost too, right?
Exactly. Right, so. Only if it's too much, then you have to just bring it down a little bit if there's a lot of mulch. But I mean, if it's a little bit, just spread it out and work it into the soil.
Right. So, Debbie, hope that helps you out. But I guess our number one advice is get rid of that landscaping fabric out of there, and then and you know, put the perennials in, but use mulch to keep the everything moist around there. It'll keep the weeds down too. Right.
And then the last part of her question was, should I plant those perennials in the fall or should I plant them in the spring? You can plant perennials right up till freeze up. However, I do find that waiting till spring, if you want to do all the prep right now, I would suggest wait till spring, figure out your plan, and then plant your perennials in the spring.
Okay. So do the prepping now and then springtime. So best case scenario, do the prepping now and then springtime, run into the garden center, get them going, and then finish it off, sort of thing.
Absolutely.
You can even put the mulch on over the soil and just pull the mulch away and plant right into the mulch. Then it's easier. Then you don't have to worry about covering up your plants afterwards. So plant into the mulch afterwards.
Perfect. Let's go to our last break. And the second round of the lightning round is coming up after this. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. You're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Welcome back to the show. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. Can't believe it's already been 2 hours, and here we go. It's time for the second lightning round, and we've got as many texts answered as we can. We've got Jill and Rick on the phones. They're in Kelowna right now. Let's go to this next one. It's from Jamie, who's in Watson. Jamie's a regular caller and texter of ours. I have about 40 apples on my Prairie Sensation apple tree. They're quite small and half green. What can I do to ensure that I have the best apples this year? I've tried one and they are really sour at this point. I do have the fruit and berry fertilizer. Would you still fertilize an apple tree right now? And will they get sweeter over time? I don't have a lot of experience with apple trees yet. So that's the first question from Jamie.
Prairie Sensation get ripe in about the first week of September, so you got a whole month yet. So lots of time for them to go, and you can put one last time with the apple trees or that fruit and berry because there's a very low nitrogen.
Yep.
And otherwise, that's all I would do for them, other than keeping the moisture up on them, keeping them just moist, not wet, and just moist, and they'll be fine, and you'll see ripening around the September long weekend or just a week after that.
So they're just a little bit later for Jamie. She's just maybe used to trees getting going sooner. So okay,
the only couple of apple trees that really fruit out this time of the year, that's things like higher number 12 or the Norland apple. The rest of them fruiting will ripen out toward the end of August, beginning of September.
So just a little too early. Her second text, or Jamie's second text, for about 4 years in a row now, I have a small green yellow worm, about 3/4 inch long, on my mountain ash trees. They completely decimate the leaves, and all that's left is branches and the middle vine of the leaves. Any idea what these are, how to take care of them? The mountain ash trees are right next to my front deck, and they leave my deck and furniture covered with little black seed-like things. I think it's their doo-doo, which is pretty disgusting. So they're making a mess of the deck, and they're ruining the trees.
Right now we're seeing a lot of sawfly damage, which is a fly that lays an egg, and in the larva stage is a worm.
Yep.
Usually a black or orange head and sort of no fuzzy, sort of green color or brown color on the body, but no hair on it, okay? And so that's the sawfly larva, and you can take care of that easy just with a soap, an insecticidal soap or Endol, or Bug X Out. It'll take care of them right away. Or another product called BTK. Bob Tom Ken is the biological.
Yep.
Doesn't hurt any other insects, just caterpillars.
And if they're the caterpillar, that's what's eating them, and that's easy. Just use the BTK, spray it all, and it'll keep it from ruining the tree. So get going with that right now, then. If she's starting to see it, pull it apart.
As soon as you see it, get at it.
Okay, so get them gone. Perfect.
Yep.
All right, next text line in our lightning round here. Let's see if I can get to the next one. I got a couple that have replied. Tim in Lumsden. I have poplar trees in my yard, which looks to be black knot, which is causing the tree to rot out and snap. My question is, can I take cuttings from the new growth that comes out after I cut the tree down and replant them?
Yeah, you can. There should be, especially best time to take those is in the spring, in March, when the branches are about pencil size thickness and about 6 inches long.
Okay.
Put them in the fridge, and then as a hardwood cutting, and then plant them out in the spring. And what he has is called a canker. Okay.
Oh, okay.
And so that happens to some varieties of poplars where they'll get the canker and the top will die down and the bottom will just start growing again.
So can you just leave this, like, you can transplant, you can take those cuttings, or you can just cut it down and let it grow from the bottom again?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
So the top is going to die and break off, and the best thing to do is get rid of that canker is just to cut it down and get it gone out of the yard so it doesn't spread to the other plants.
Okay, well, there you go. Tracy's from Brandon, Manitoba, which is cool. We're getting some listeners from other provinces now. That's fantastic. Hi, we planted a linden tree 4 years ago. And it's now 12 feet tall. Last year, it started throwing out shoots at the ground level. This year, it's the same, and the leaves are small and dry. Also, there's a row of six holes in a row about 3 feet up on the trunk. Any ideas?
Those are sapsuckers. It's a bird, right? Like a
woodpecker.
Like a woodpecker. They love the linden. They come through in the spring, and when the saps are running, and then they migrate farther up north. That's where they nest, okay? And so best thing to do is put a trunk guard around them in the spring. You can take it off again once the migration is done. The only reason that there's having problems with the little leaves is that you got to watch the moisture in those. Not too wet or not too dry. And then with the suckers, prune them off. And then as soon as a new sucker comes off, a new leaf comes out of the base, don't prune it off. Rather than just take a product called Top Gun or Advance and spray them. You have to do that. It's only preventive, so you have to do that at least once a week or once every 2 weeks, and then just control it that way. You're not going to cure that, okay? The suckering.
Okay. Brian's in Saskatoon. Do daylilies need fertilizer? I probed it with rebar. It's pretty wet. They're planted this year.
Yeah, daylilies definitely need fertilizer. I would just use a well-balanced 20-20-20 fertilizer on my daylilies. And also, they like well-drained soil. So make sure that you're slowing down the watering or even aerate around those daylilies so that they can some air can get down to those roots. That would definitely help.
Okay. Eunice is in Saskatoon. I have snow on the mountain in my backyard under my dogwood tree. It has taken over that section of my yard, no doubt, and is totally out of hand. How can I get rid of it? It's about 10 by 12 feet size.
The best way to get rid of it is to dig it out, honestly. You can use like a Roundup if you want to that way, but best way is to dig it out. If you're planting something like snow on the mountain and you want it to stay contained, I would suggest planting it into a container and then sinking the container into the ground.
Okay, we're going to stop right there. We're pretty much out of time, guys. We got a couple of texts to answer off the air, but that's it. Thanks for joining us and listening. We'll be with a pre-recorded show next week and live in 2 weeks again for your calls and texts. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. You've been listening to Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.